Umiiyak ka na naman lumapit ka sa pihing ng dahilan, ba't ka lumuluha? Ba't ka lumuluha? Tutulungan na, kumaan nandito lang ako. Ika'y pakikinggan, huwag ka nang lumuha. Huwag ka nang lumuha. Ako ang kaibigan mo, di mawawala sa piling mo. Tumaan man ang mga bagyo, andito lang ako para sa'yo.
Hello, Whole World Radio. Welcome to the Nova One Show. We are here with a very special guest, Tom Dente from Northeastern Pennsylvania. He has a band called Pain of Wisdom in a World of Waste, and their message is beautiful because their music is about preserving natural resources and also agricultural sustainability.
Potato bugs are eating my fields with no repentance, with no repentance. Cutworm armies are cutting me down with no repentance, with no repentance. This is the way of the world, there's no escape. Associations of the food chain and the web of the life, from the blood that we bleed to the air we breathe. Try to understand how it is all connected. Look into it closely because it is a lesson. This is the way of the world. This is the way of the world. I should have had the soy of compost. Session right from the start.
Joining Tom with my co-host Terry. Hi, Terry.
Nova, how you doing?
I'm good. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hi, hello, world.
So I guess the first logical question would be, how did you start to get into farming?
Yeah, I wasn't born into it. It just came, I had a child come into my life at one point, and that just made me really look at things differently. So I just started thinking about life and things in general. And I was attracted to it. It was almost like a calling. I don't know. When I was younger, I was always into gardening and stuff like this. My mom, was into vegetables and flowers, but as I was older, I don't know, just something came over me. And when I had a book, John Seymour's Self-Sufficient Life and How to Live It, and I read that book and I just said, ooh, I'm going to do that, and I did that. When I left, I was in a pro sports, professional paintball at the time, and my career was going really well. The reason I left there was, that was almost just like a voice, just go home to the woods. After about 13 years in Jersey, I came home, and I was with a woman, and we had this kid, and Matthew, his name was, which is interesting. And then I just started farming because of the child, really, because I thought, I should feed him.
So
it would be a revolution. And I figured, pillaging and doing these things would be easy. But once there was a child in my life, it changed the way I thought about things. And then I realized that if we just started growing food more, we ain't going to have to fight over starvation. I often thought of the thing, and it's interesting, Terry, because I didn't know you guys were Jesus, godly when we took an interview, but one thing I always said was, if in great philosophers, as Jesus was, whether you believe he's the son of God or not, it doesn't matter, his words are magnificent. If you don't teach people to eat, we're only fighting over food.
Yeah.
So if you teach people that eat.
Right.
Right? If Jesus couldn't have fed the multitudes, they would have tore each other to shreds.
Right.
So I think it's almost like if I was ever going to do a, you know, a religious nonprofit, because I think in weird ways all the time, complex ways, one would be a Teach a Man to Fish Foundation. So I just thought, wow, it's that easy. We could just grow food and eat, and everything stems from agriculture. That's right. What took us from prehistoric man into
modern
into man. Modern, whether that's good or bad.
Yes. Control the food, control the population. So your idea to do that foundation sounds wonderful. And you are already starting with your consulting. And I know that you've also had other positive impacts in the farming industry, even if just on an individual level with people you've been able to influence and the way they've changed their lives.
Yeah, over the years as I did it, and we do the type of agriculture that I do is very small scale and non-traditional. It's not conventional, let's say. It's somewhere along the line early on, I had a book called Modern Science and Agriculture from 1851, and it was pretty awesome. So a lot of the stuff I do, I farmed for 13 years there with no machinery. I was doing 5, 6, 7 acres of gardens, just using natural behaviors of animals, pigs to plow, things like this. As we had said before, there's so much information that you could go on forever about it. But yeah, we try to use the natural behaviors of animals and the weather and the behaviors of plants and dirt and rain and things like that.
So you're working with Mother Nature instead of against her.
Yeah, we ride the waves. We don't create them.
Yeah, that's amazing. I like Monsanto, they're creating drought-resistant seeds. Why can't we just desalinate water and create more water? I mean, why are we doing the opposite and poisoning ourselves?
And first question I would ask is, if I look at how the Indians were, well, there was 9 of them in Arizona, so maybe we should try to put 75 million people there. Right. I know I'm paraphrasing and using real big crazy numbers. Someone's going to say there was more than 9 Indians there. And not 75 million people there, I know, but you know, in a comedic response to it, yeah, maybe sometime. Joel Salatin, another great guy, check him out. He's all over YouTube. Modern human beings are super good at hitting the bullseye on the wrong target.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? Why do you think it's so hard for us to change our ways when we, most of us realize it's a necessity at this point, an act of self-preservation? And also, like, while we're here, it makes it, our lives are actually, our quality of life is less because of the way we're living. And then we also don't think about the future. Why do you think that is?
Why do I think that is? That's a super complex, you know,
I mean, in your own individual experience with people, when you're talking, just your personal perspective. So
the first thing is, as we said, when I first came in, we were chatting. It takes a certain level of intelligence to ask a question. So some people don't know that anything is wrong.
Right.
And in nature's eyes, there really is nothing wrong, because if a fox eats a chicken, is it good or bad? There's no such thing. There's only movement, progress, forward. That's the only thing that happens in nature. In geopolitical terms or socioeconomic terms would be the better term. It's probably the why nothing changes, because food's too cheap, period. Right. And people will go, oh my God, I spent so much money on food. Well, yeah, but like, no, because, and we don't really get into politics, but people are rallying against statism and all of this and socialism. And every time we make a purchase in this country, it's through subsidized food. So I can buy a dozen eggs for $1.19 in any store, or pork for $1.20 a pound, or beef for $5 a pound. It costs me more than that to raise all of it. And that's cheap food. That's through subsidies and corporate. I'm not sure if I say government interference, but corporate/government are almost the same people now, even though we are the government, we are the people, which is where the Gandhi philosophies come into how you combat all this. If each individual did the right thing, but it's mostly cheap food. That's what keeps it going.
Can't the government subsidize anything they want? Can't they subsidize better ways of farming instead of subsidizing beef, which they know is contributing to greenhouse gases and taking away the
land? Subsidize anything.
Yeah, they can do anything they want. So the fact that they're standing behind this current situation when they could be redirecting funds elsewhere to benefit everyone baffles me.
That's it. That's a whole discussion. Maybe they shouldn't be giving anybody's money to anybody. The government's supposed to deliver the mail, keep a dollar in Alabama, the same as a dollar in Tennessee or Pennsylvania or Texas, and not let anybody invade us. They're supposed to keep the guns and bullets ready. All the other stuff they're doing is really not constitutional anyway.
Right.
So they shouldn't be taking anybody's money and giving it to anyone else. Taxes should be done on a local basis.
Yes.
If my town wants to trade with yours, we put the money together and build a road.
Yes.
So we pay for it. And then take the toll roads down or make the toll roads pay for the school. I don't get it. So then when Alabama and Tennessee want to make a road going back and forth, everybody puts their money up. The government makes sure a dollar's a dollar over there. And they're supposed to take care of crimes between states. The whole thing has just gotten way out of control. So for us in powwow, we don't focus on any of that because we don't want to choose sides. I think there's a lot of types of leaders in this planet, right?
Yeah.
Ones that lead because they're cool, ones that lead because they're powerful, and age takes care of all that. And then there's that do. And I think if you do things that are godly, for lack of a better term, or more closer to nature, or truthful, if you will, under natural law, righteous. Good word.
If you do it in a righteous manner. Now, here's the thing with why these things are happening. Everything is an illusion, right? So what happens is the food is right there, right? If Tom comes over my house and says, listen, let's plant a whole garden back here and we grow it. And now I got all my food sitting here. And then the government says, well, we're getting that for free. How can we make this where we make people pay for it? So that's where it comes in. You have to follow the money. The money is what makes these things make it look like there's no food here or we can't feed you.
And so... You know, we always said, like, this is all problems we're talking about, right? So I want to focus on solutions.
Solutions.
So, because we could rally about this where we could do things. You know, so.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Regardless of what he's saying, they make money on the computer. I take the magic of creation. I take a seed and I throw it in the ground. And when I grow $20 worth of turnips, I just took the money off the computer because I'm not buying it. So I can imagine what could happen.
Yeah. Right. There's one factor, though, that is also, I think, an issue with our society today, and especially with the degradation of how we are living with lower income, but the same household dynamic isn't there because the dollar is inflating, and I could go on and on. But I think it's the time it takes to do your own farming and your own gardening. If you're not in a position to even be home,
collective living,
set it up, you can't do anything. You don't even know where to start, and you don't have the time to even think about it. You're just running to the grocery store and buying the cheap eggs because that's all you can do. And that's the part that really frustrates me, because I know so many people want to do something and they don't even know how and can't even think about it.
So the philosophical saying, it takes a village, actually applies. I do believe the future. There's a woman named Penny Kelly, and the book is called Robes, R-O-B-E-S. I recommend everybody buy it and read it immediately, because she claims she's a seer, and she just talks about how the future will be, and there's going to be collectives, there's going to be villages again. It makes financial sense, municipal farms, things like this.
That would be beautiful.
If you Google intentional villages or eco-villages, I know the hippies had the word commune, and then the media wrecked the word, and they made Charles Manson the flagship provocateur of all the hippie communes, so you can't use that word no more, because everybody's afraid of that. But really, communal living. Oh, communism. Geez, shoot that down too. I'm not saying communism. You know, Bruce sits on top of the hill because he doesn't want everybody bothering him. Only the burden of learning is on the student. And if we need to teach that to children, we're not teaching how to learn. We're teaching what to learn. We don't teach wisdom.
We teach them to go to factories and work, and we don't teach higher thinking. And also, as far as education is concerned, that's also in the current dynamic of the red line districts and being able to be home with your child and the quality of the education you're getting, that ties into growing up and having time and money to do things. Like it's constant battle, and you're always going uphill because there's the dollar inflation, there's the market crashes, there's mortgage, you know, everything goes up and down.
Trying to seize with that which is his and give him back his money. That's how you beat it.
Yeah.
For me, I gave away money and just get rid of it. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but you know, if you focus on money, you'll have money. For me, I'm a little wacky. I mean, I stout discipline. I'm always in my garden. But honestly, I spent, you know, if you spend 10 hours a week in a garden, you can do quite a bit of damage. Meaning, you know, you can grow a lot of stuff. If you're composting, you're wise about it, the way I do it at my house, it's all in my basic routine, my habits. Nothing is garbage. The compost goes right in the bucket on the counter, goes right in the bucket on the porch, goes right in the garden. It's part of my routine. So easily by myself now, I'm growing 1,500, 1,000 pounds of food a year, just you know, a few hours a week. So it ain't that hard, you know. But
and that's what the illusion is, to make you think that it's hard, it takes too long to do. No, it's about greed. It's about how fast, and I don't even want you to work for me. I let me make a synthetic version of what you're doing, so I don't have to pay anybody, I don't have to give anybody anything, and then I sell this stuff to the people. Because we know that the people are overwhelmed with their scheduling, their jobs, yeah. and now you just want to buy it because it's right in your face. So that's what they do. That's why it's called convenient. We put it all around you. So everywhere you turn, there's a store for you.
Funny, he said buying. One of my good friends who I flipped, there's Nate, Jay, Frank, Chris, Travis, George, all these dudes that I live near, Ruth, Kachera, they flipped and now they're doing this. But the one dude, Frankie, he used to spend a lot of money on nonsense, and he stopped buying disposable income, like plastic wrapper you throw it in the garbage, things that you use and throw in the garbage. Like, why are we buying this? Plastic forks and stuff. Why are you throwing? Just throw the money away. If you want to get rid of your money. So he started paying attention to that, and he put that money to his gardens. And this year, in his first year, he grew like 750 pounds of vegetables. Yeah, and just by not throwing away disposable income no more, you know, disposable tea bags, buy the little metal thing that, you know, it's exponential. You can follow that further.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
How can you describe to me your passion and philosophy behind your music? I mean, I hear it right now, but how does that meld with what you guys are all doing collectively? Because you're not the only person in the band. Other people are writing and other people. How do you guys all meld together, and how does that form your music for you?
Well, how we write the music is an interesting thing. Me and the bass player do a lot of demoing. I do a lot of demoing. I do demoing with friends. And we usually just do a quick chorus, a quick verse, a bridge, whatever sounds good, a lyric we caught. And then since our drummer is kind of, he leans one way musically, and we like that because he's a very emotional, passionate guy about what he likes and doesn't like. And he's a deep thinker, but he doesn't allow it into his fabric of his daily being. So he's a little less kooky than I am. So we like this earthly approach to things. So he gets to view the songs first. And out of about every 15 or 20 songs, he picks three or four, and the rest we just delete. And then so we pick those, and we go from there. And we're always using some sort of elemental approach. Earth first philosophical endeavor is in our songs. Be it sound spirit, sound planet, these type of things. We're singing about these type of things.
So you guys are all on the same page.
Yeah.
How did that occur? Do you guys just have a commonality in farming, or is it just a philosophy of how the world's going, or
both? I came from the hippie side of things when I was growing up. I was kind of earthly and hippy dippy, and I followed the Grateful Dead around, and you know, just thought everything was beautiful and great. Learn through life that you can't rule your house with love. But so I knew it from there, and I grew up in the woods. Brian was counterculture, as in he was a punk rocker, so he, you know, or he was like that. He learned counterculture that way. And I think Tony is just such a deep thinker that he understands it. And Tony is really an interesting guy in the band because he thinks like me and Brian at the same time all the time. So both sides of it, you know?
Yeah.
It's a good mending point. So I just think we all understand the philosophy. It makes sense to us mathematically or philosophically. And we just
I've seen little snippets of you guys performing or just like warming up. And it's like you're all speaking the same language without even really talking to each other. It's amazing. It's like you guys are a well-oiled machine. That's why I asked the question. It's like you guys don't skip a beat. It's amazing.
That's because they're good musicians. I mean, if we took all the philosophies and things out of it, I'm really lucky to play with Tony for sure. Like, yeah, he's phenomenal. He understands theory. He can play all the stuff that, you know, and Brian is a punk rock thrash drummer that plays things that Brian's approach to music. And then me, I've been playing a long time, different styles of music. So we're fortunate to be together that way. And then emotionally and spiritually and mentally, we're together too. So we're really lucky and we all know it. And it's funny you say we're well oiled because we laugh. We're like, man, if we would just practice like a real band, you know, we play like 3 or 4 times a month, we would actually do something. But, you know, life. But I mean, I'm thankful for it. So thankful.
Can you describe your music style to us?
Yeah, punk rock, thrash, blues, metal.
That's a flip, buddy.
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
So, I mean, it's funny because we actually have, I think we have about 42 or 3 songs written now, and we could play a metal set, we could almost play a blues rock set, and we could play a thrash punk set, and it's 3 total different bands.
Are we going to hear a new album in the future?
Yeah, we're going to have that done about 3 months ago.
What do you have done already? I know you've done an opus and you've done a whole slew of songs.
We've done.
I like Any More Time personally. That's one of my favorites.
That was one of the singles. So thank you, by the way. That was just a single. That was just a quick runoff. We try to keep them together. So we have like volume 1 from our first batch of songs. And then we got another writer and we have volume 2 from our second batch of writing. And then we got a new bass player, ripped off those 3 singles. And then from previously, me and a different writer had written the opus, which is a 18 and a half minute punk rock opera. It's a wow. Journey of enlightenment from a guy that, it's actually a story about my thing kind of, but I try not to make this about me. I always say I'm a conduit of energy. Mm-hmm. That was about a guy waking up or growing up in violence and coming through and finding nature and coming out of it in a, you know, a different mm-hmm. approach. So that was written earlier with the guy, and then we just finished it after we were done with the first 2 discs. And then we wrote another one that was almost finished, and then Corona hit.
Oh, wow.
And all of our shows got bumped around, shut down, done, canceled. And then so we didn't know what to do because we were just getting ready to go out. We were going to finish that album and then go play out to support it, but we just went right back in the studio to do a 4th, another one. We didn't even finish tracking,
right?
Just because.
And you bring that message through the music also, which is unique in itself.
Yeah, we try. Yeah, like our song "Potato Bugs" is straight up farm core.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I mean, we sing about that. We have a new one called
"Farm Core." Is a good catchy phrase.
We say we're farm core eco core band, and yeah. We've never found another one anywhere in the world,
which is unique. So yeah. Completely. That's what intrigued me about hearing the music, because you would think, you know, you could easily just did metal, just, you know,
right.
Sing about what everybody else does.
Yeah, so
to take that and take it that direction is incredible.
We did it on purpose. That's why I picked punk. Like when mm-hmm. I met Brian, I was like, wow, he's really awesome. And this concept, I was like, wow. When I used to go to hippie shows, I would go and see 30,000 people, and it was great,
right,
in its fashion.
Right.
But then I'd go to hardcore thrash punk shows, you know, Eastern PA hardcore way back right. in the day. Like 300 people would have. It was like a nuclear bomb going off in the building, and it would give me chills.
Right.
So I thought, let's use that energy. Right. And I wrote this, because this is great. About 12 or 14 years ago, I embarked upon a journey. The sustainable agriculture awakened, took over me, my eyes opened. It was such a simple math. It was revolutionary. I promoted it for over a decade, but the revolution never happened.
Ah.
And it never happened in music either. Like, we'd sing to these crowds of people that are moshing and jumping through our mic stands, and they love it, and then they ask us to go to Burger King at the end of the you know, so it's like, you know, the cards are stacked against us. Even you see, I'm wearing a tie-dye.
I love your shirt. Yep. Peace tie-dye shirt.
This is so, and we love hippies. I don't use it in a derogatory term, but we use it to trick the hippies, because in upstate New York and Hudson Valley and all of that area, they have great concerts and fantastic following of people,
right?
So friendly. I had a girlfriend, we were up there doing jewelry. She did jewelry at these hippie festivals for about 10 months,
right?
So and the band would follow and play. We played a few shows, and it was fantastic. But the first time we went to play, we're up there in all our black, and we're ready to rock and roll, and they're burning like half the forest down in a bonfire outside the gig. And so we got up there, and I have a problem where I say things I shouldn't, and we got on the mic. I think they pulled the plug early on. Like, these metalheads are here, you know, and we're scared of hippies. So, you know, My drummer, he's awesome, but sometimes we borderline want to beat up hippies, even though we're kind of hippies, but we don't want to beat up anybody. It's just a funny thing you say, darn hippies, you know? So the next time we went back, we got invited back to one of their awesome events up there. And they have a great thing.
Where was this, Tom?
Love them. So I'm not going to say the name of the gigs because people will know who we are. And,
okay.
In upstate New York.
Okay.
On, right on the Delaware River. But they invited us back to this one, I will say, Barryville, New York. I forget who got me the show. It's Sunday morning. Brad Georgie. He's a real cool guy that plays in that band. Got us a gig through this Robbie Robinson guy, I believe. You know, it's a blur. I forget names.
I forget names all the time, too.
The guy dies, and I didn't talk any crap, right? So now remember, don't pick on the hippies when you get there. I said, all right, man, it's great. All right. And they loved us. So, right. So from now on, we wear tie dyes. Hello. And I got the peace sign.
I love it. I did notice that first thing.
Yeah. So-
that you connected with the teacher.
You got to know the language of the subject, which you hope to reach in your communication. So,
yeah,
that's our hippie story.
Nice. I love it. Where can people find your music, and what do you have? What's the name of your current album?
We don't have any names for the new album. We've been calling them volumes. Volume 1, Volume 2, Volume 3.
Okay.
Probably Volume 4. At some point, if we ever get signed big and people want to spend money on us, we'll do real albums. Right now, when we write a batch of songs, we just release them as they come. If we go in the studio and do three, that's what it is. That's volume next song. So we have an interesting, we actually harvest music in the studio. We harvest music, right? Because we plant seeds and we pick the good fortuitous ones.
Yeah.
I write 12 or 15 songs. Brian picks 3 or 4.
Right.
We go in the studio, we record 8 or 9, then we pick 3 or 4.
Right.
Everything
that's
else goes away.
Stuff.
So just the Led Zeppelin approach to things. Which,
right. Okay.
So, you know, instead of really tinkering around and fooling around, when it comes to us, we slam it out. If we don't like it, we chop it down and throw it in the compost.
There you go. You
know? Nice. That's great.
Yeah.
So where can they find your songs?
Oh, yeah.
Is Spotify or?
Yeah, no, right. Powwow Media Group on YouTube. Queenofwisdom.com. We have a very pathetic website. So if there's anybody out there that's looking to promote, support, and make money off of bands or take our stuff and do stuff, we need help. We're just a bunch of guys that work in the forest industry, the hardscaping industry, and the agriculture and masonry industry. And, you know, we're trying to live our lives. We're past the point of, like, riding around a band.
Right.
Trying to pump the shows that way. So we're looking for help. We need promotion. They can find us on Facebook, Pain of Wisdom, In a World of Waste, one word, at Facebook. I believe we're on SoundCloud.
Okay, perfect.
But the YouTube's the best one. Like and subscribe. That does the most for us. It seems today there's a lot of new change in how industries are going, and it seems that YouTube is a big deal now.
Social media, YouTube, whole world radio, what we're doing in this realm is what brings it across the whole world. It's a win-win situation when sending music out to YouTube.
It really is.
Because somebody's going to like it.
Yeah, and somebody's, we'll give the money away. If you want to take our band and run with it, just get us clicks on the thing. We don't even care about the money. We really don't. If we wanted any money, we'd have been lawyers.
Right.
You could have been a lawyer, Tom. You could have been a lawyer. I already know that for a fact, because you already kind of were.
Yeah, and the chicken battles. I had some chicken battles. I had to represent myself. I lived in an association. They were trying to sue me out of my chickens, and it was 7 years, 14 attempts at court, and I think we spent about $16,000 between all the entities involved, and I never got rid of the chickens. they've all died or quit or moved away.
Oh, wow.
And they just, honestly, I knew I was, it wasn't me. I'm just a conduit of energy, and being aligned with nature, I really try to do it. And you know, I have to have some ego in this. I know there is, but like, I was in the right there. So if you guys want to take my body and my house and everything over a handful of chickens, you're more than welcome to it. I'll probably fight you because I'm not a pacifist,
right?
But I'm still going to grind you up. It won't matter. If you're willing to take my life for what I believe in, that's not affecting anybody else in a negative way.
Right.
Creating my own source of food, right. I that's okay with me.
Right.
I'm not going to go.
Definitely.
But, you know, because I'm not a pacifist. But Jesus was awesome. Gandhi's awesome. And Martin Luther King were awesome. But, you know, in this world, things are funny. I do believe using force against violence is okay if someone invades your space.
Well, yeah, that's
I agree.
look at things that way also. If you're going to come in the animal's world, then, you know, they're going to be on guard, ready to protect themselves.
Yeah, mother chickens are little bees. I love bees because he's this big. He don't care. Yeah, you wreck this house, you're in trouble. And so I like that. It's cute, kind of. I got zapped in my boots. Yeah, it's all good. I just hope the future, like with Powwow, we're rallying and raging against this ridiculous lifestyle we've been born into with the hopeful result of a positive outcome. I mean, those were Brian's words, and he said it, and that's really what we want.
That's why you don't care about the money. That's, you just want people to start changing the way they think.
Yes, and here's the thing. We said, awesome. The music was great. It was right on time. I thought I was going to get down to the. There's no Shangri-La, and nature doesn't have an equal playing field anywhere. And I think the ideal of equality as we fight for it is a human emotional construct. I think strength and weakness is probably a more honest way for everybody involved to approach things.
Wow.
And because, you know, there is no such thing as equality that way. A fish born in shallow water, did he ever have a chance? I don't know. You know, these are heavy questions, but.
Equality, and when you blend politics and the economical and a government into people, it never works.
It doesn't work because it's taken from one to give to another at your own will and discretion.
Right. And in a quiet, in a unique way, what you're presenting to the people is, how do I create something out of nothing? Right. And that's the level of thought process that we all need to be on, because you're creating your own food. Right? So if everyone decided to create their own food.
I'm managing it. Yes, I'm managing the creation power. I'm not creating it, I'm managing the creation power.
Creating your food,
right? Right, I'm taking seeds and I'm absolutely creating it.
Right.
Managing it, yes, creating it that way, 100%.
That's right. If you're making, putting the seeds in the ground and growing your own food, there would be, no one would be starving. Because everyone, even the person that didn't have it, you would have enough to give to the other person. So,
right.
But that doesn't, that doesn't make money.
Well, and it's a funny thing because, as he was just saying, no one would be starving. But in nature, what happens is something comes along to keep it in check. So, and this is another thing, and I'm not into eugenics because I know there's still a watering hole in nature. We're going to talk about the room in a second. But unless human beings plan on moving with technology, and the amount that they have going into the future, if they don't talk about, this is really controlling birth or controlling population somewhere, we have to do a war, because eventually if we all grew enough food, our population would swell to the point that we'd be like a lake and run out of food and the fish starve. So, but there really is magic and the spirit of self-determination. Humans are creative creatures and they're spiritual beings as well. I think we're going to do better if all the planet and its creatures are created as equals. But here's the deal with the watering hole. You know what the watering hole is, April? You know?
No, I don't.
So this is a natural thing. We talk about these natural things, gravity, things drop, things breathe, light, dark, hot, cold, that's breath. The watering hole is where in nature, it applies to the fox eating the chicken. Is it good or bad? Unlucky, unfit animals, you know, unhealthy, unlucky.
Natural selection.
Go to the watering hole. That's where they, because that's where all the hunters go. Right. The unlucky, the slow, right. The unfit, the unwitty.
Okay.
So I used to get mad about Walmarts. And I went, burn them. Stores down and they're wrecking everything. And one time I was sitting in a Walmart parking lot for whatever reason, because I do shop there and I go there sometimes. As we enlighten, you know, when this critical thinking comes on, one of the first stages of critical thinking is depression. So early on, I'd be mad. Then you're going to Walmart. Then I sat there once and I watched. And I watched overweight people squishing out of their shoes going in there. No judgment against them. I don't have to do it because the judgment is in natural law. I watch just people going in there, coming out with throwaway stuff. And I was looking and I'm sitting there and I was on the phone with one of my buddies and I said, holy moly, there's the watering hole. So I don't want to tell anybody what to do. I'm going to do what I do. And the smart will see it. Light attracts light. If people want to shop at Walmart, go ahead. If people want to fight over politics, please do it. It's fun to watch. I know that sounds cool, but I watch YouTube. I love watching the poor boys and the Antifa beat each other up. Because, you know.
I tell people all the time, Tom, I used to work on Capitol Hill. I don't know what it looked like. I was a messenger on Capitol Hill. People saw how the government really runs.
Insane.
They would look at themselves, how stupid was that?
Insane.
It doesn't have, they didn't get nothing about this.
It's like a theatrical nightmare.
It's one big party.
It's a big party. Big party.
And they get they have your food farmed in to the Capitol.
Yeah, we kill chickens here and send them out to a boat to get them processed and send them back.
We're going to send it to you guys. But the real
Who food, are they? Who's he talking about? Who's the government? This is a good one, because who is the government? They, them, those. Who are they, right? No, it's I, it's me and you. It's
supposed to be us. Yeah.
Yeah. This is where Gandhi and these guys, Martin Luther King, all the great thinkers, if everybody actually believed in karmic law, I know there is no Shangri-La and you can't be a Buddhist nudist all the time, right? But, you know, we really wouldn't need cops. But agriculture is a funny thing. You know about this? Do you know the most... ecologically and scientifically, the most advanced man on the planet was primitive man. Mm. And they only carried amount of babies, or they only born the amount of babies they could carry.
Right.
As soon as we started growing stuff here, well, you know what happened? We needed to store it. Now we need security.
Yep.
Now we need cops.
Yep.
Now who's in charge of that? Now there's a separation in society. Right. So agriculture is good the way we used it.
Right.
There's a, you know.
Okay. That makes sense.
It's my territory.
Heavy questions, nature, God's will, all these things is heavy, heavy duty stuff.
It's like watching the Gunsmoke Rifleman series, because every him and his son will be out in the front, and all of a sudden become the horses. Somebody's coming into town.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Who's that, Paul? Now we're going, I need your animals, I need your cows, I need your this, that, because you got more than me.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what it turned into when man started modernizing and storing stuff.
But I believe through time and trial and error and mistakes, because there is, in sustainable agriculture, another law we have is there's no problems, there's only solutions. Mm-hmm. We talked about pigs before. I'll talk about this real quick. Pigs, they dig. That's a problem for farmers. They dig out, they wreck everything, they destroy them. So we said, wow, they dig. I'm going to put them on a concrete floor and then buy a machine to dig the field. Why don't I let the pig dig? Well, when he digs in one spot too long, he trods it and makes a hard clay and he can't plant it. Well, in nature, they don't do that. Why? Well, because they don't want to be in their own feces.
Right.
They did get a bite and move. Right. So now we figure out how to put the pig in one spot for 3 days. He digs it the right amount and we move him out of that pen immediately. So instead of one small pen, we have 40 small pens, 3 day pens. So now for 120 days, my pig's moving through the forest. I'm planting right behind them. So now the pig knows the problem. It's incredible.
That's incredible.
This is the thing. That's what I'm telling you. Yeah.
So you find solutions to the things that we're sitting here talking about. Instead of dwelling on what's wrong.
Because
the problem for one thing is a solution for something else.
It's because everything has an opposite.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Good, evil.
Right.
Hot, cold.
Right.
Problem solution. There's a polar opposite
that you can find to apply that problem to as a solution.
Right.
I can go out, I can go in. Everything is molecular and connected. So there's has to be a polar opposite, because things don't come in squares, they come in spheres.
Right.
So there's a universal polar opposite to every single thing. Tai Chi.
Yeah, definitely.
So if we can get this into our boots and soul, get the prayers into the feet on the ground, mm-hmm. I think we'd be better.
Yeah, it's true. It's absolutely true.
That's fascinating, the way you just described the problem is actually a solution to something else. That's amazing.
You can always find a solution. Always.
It's jujitsu. It's spiritual, mental, kung fu.
I was told that it's spiritually, it's always at least seven ways out of a situation that you may think there's nothing. What can I do? It's seven ways out of it. You just got to have your mind open to see it, to solve that solution, that problem, make it work.
Seven shots.
Yeah, not the learned helplessness, right?
Yeah.
Learned helplessness. Where'd you hear that?
I read a lot.
That's a great word.
Yeah, it's a psychology.
You tell someone they're helpless, because then they get upset. Right.
So, not only that, if you believe you're helpless, you don't look for the solution. So you're tricked into thinking you don't, just like Terry was saying, you have to be open to seeing the solutions. People,
this holistic learning as a children is so important. You put 20 kids in a situation and see who takes to what. Okay, that kid likes this, let's do that with that kid. That kid likes this, let's do that with that kid.
That's how you do it.
You know, you don't put a chicken, right. you don't try to make a chicken a draft horse or a horse swim.
Absolutely, we all have our own strengths. And
everybody has different talents.
Strengths, and we
play, like you said before, you were talking, Tom, and I know we're probably out of time, but you were talking about how you were sort of touching on that and how it's strength and weakness. You actually said that part, but you were applying it to a different concept that I was thinking, but we all are born into a strength and we are all in need in some way. So if we work hand in hand, it's not necessarily a total Shangri-La, because you're always going to have somebody else wanting something you have and et cetera. But if everybody sees that one person as the threat, like you said, we wouldn't need police because we'd be policing ourselves. We'd be taking care of ourselves. And we don't need to be dependent on someone if we're also using our strength, because it's a cohesive, you know, back and forth.
Correct.
Situation, which I think we, like you said, with the schooling and with the animals, with there's a problem and then there's a solution, because it's not really a problem. You just have to figure out a way to apply it. It's like it goes on every single level of life. And so I think the way you think is beautiful.
I would like to say thank you. I appreciate that. It's not me. I'm just a conduit of
and that's a good way of saying it. That means he has an unselfish spirit.
I don't want to
do that. You don't want to take the glory for what he's able to do.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest, highest power of spirituality you can have, to be unselfish and to help others, to do for others. So, I mean, it's incredible when you have that type of energy, the things that's going to always come to you easily because you think that way.
I try to describe Tom to some people, and I just say he's not on this planet. He's not in a good way. He's just not here. He's somewhere else. Just his body's here, but he's always somewhere else doing something else. And the intelligence and like the synapses that must be going on in that brain to be able to juggle everything is just, it's mind boggling to me.
Exhaust people, including myself, as we spoke about polar opposites, it comes at a cost, believe me. It's okay. You know me, as I was young, I always wasn't this refined. I got tired of conflict. Conflicts had given, but I definitely have had a lot of conflict in my life.
I can hear the evolution in your music, because I used to listen to, you know, Brazen Sages. Oh, well, your other stuff. And now I hear it in this, and it's completely evolved. It's still got energy, but it's completely evolved. Your message, your words, the way you guys sing, everything. And it's got, even if it's passion and anger, I mean, I guess they could go hand in hand. But when you're passionate about something, and like you guys said before, and it's true and it's right, it's a beautiful thing.
Anger is a gift. You know, you can't rule your house with love. And this is another thing, you know, everything applies. Again, we talk about the chicken, you know, and things, you know, we have a right to life and we have a right to that. So, you know, this is where the hippies got it wrong. And this is where the terrorists got it wrong. They got to meet in the middle. You know what I mean? So,
right.
And all that stuff could go away. There's always going to be trouble, conflict. It's going to rain on your crops. There's going to be starvation. There's going to be cows ramming through, breaking loose and busting your leg. These things, you know, this is okay.
It's so, just all how you get back up from it. That's all.
Yeah.
No matter how spiritual you're going to be, you're going to go through something. And it's how you come up out of it and how you handle it when it comes your way.
Absolutely. And that's where we need to talk about the problems and look at the problems and be able to actually disagree and talk about it.
Right. Instead of just shutting each other off the moment you hear something you don't like.
We're the same because we both have a difference. That makes me and you the same.
Right.
We're differentiated. So that's our bond right now.
Right.
At least, you know, I love watching MMA. I love it that they shake hands before they beat each other up. You know, I play paintball.
Out
on the field, but we hug at the end of the game like, dude, wow, that was great. We're out there. We choose to go out there egoically and try to snuff each other out. And as warriors, you know, it's okay because that's the warrior creed, you know.
Right.
Men are supposed to do that. Women can too, you know, but people are so. But there was one more thing I wanted to touch on there. Man, you said something. I got rambling.
And did you get all your questions that you need?
I actually had a closing question, but I didn't want to interrupt your train of thought, Tom. But I was going to ask you if you had any advice for people who might want to. Did you just remember what you were going to say?
I want to say a lot of my development over the years. I've been in the band 13 years with Brian. And, you know, I know hundreds of people. Brian's one of them few that I could say. I've been with him that long and I've never even had an argument. So a lot of using him as a beacon throughout the years, you know, talking to him, being a real good friend with him.
Yeah.
And then Tony coming along 6 years ago. So those guys have actually helped my personal spiritual development along a lot. So as far as the band goes, like, it's great. So I'm really grateful for that.
You have a lot of history with them, and that shows, I think.
Yeah, I knew Tony Roman since we were kids, and Brian.
I remember him.
Yeah. And Brian's uncles and me were best friends. So I remember when Brian was, running around in diapers. They were crazy, wild kids, man. And now here, you know, he's 11 years younger than here with our band all these years later. Yes, I do want to say that we love what we do so much that we actually talk to each other and grow with each other. And
it shows. It definitely shows.
Thanks. Hopefully the rest of the world sees it and we could do something. If we made money, we would just build eco-intentional villages. If we would take the money and put it into intentional villages, building whole communities.
There's a huge movement. There's so many people who are talking about that as well. There are people who are trying to establish small eco territories and use farming and rotate the crops and just have it just like a donut. Like they are
the same as associations. Like one big problem is now if you live in an association, unless you're an upper echelon rich bourgeois association, your house is actually worth less money. I'm saying, wow, the laws are already in place. We could get an association and use their Zone Plan Community Act to actually make it an eco village. We don't have to create our own. Yeah. Let's use theirs. Yeah. It's the enemy's. Yeah,
they have the plan. He's
getting there. So, a couple of us are looking like, wow, I have like 6 or 7 people living in one development. And we're like, if we buy a property more each, we're going to own the development. We could just do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Just take it over and do it. And if people want to participate, they can.
Right.
Because I look at my development, 100 lots, 2 acres each, and then there's another 200 acres of rough land. Like, we could raise 30 cows a year in there on everybody's property, winding through, and we could raise 60 pigs a year just on our kitchen scraps.
Right.
You ring the bell when it's time to, and you're making money to live there. You're selling yourself your own food, or at least you'll employ one or two people to work in the development.
Now, right, you're not buying your food either.
She's home too. Right. Now everybody, boom, and it becomes exponential.
Yes.
Humans are not solitary creatures. We're pack animals.
Yes, we are.
Yes, and so tribal. So
that's a whole. We have to do this again.
We can do this. Yeah.
We should. Absolutely. Do you have any advice for anyone who wants to even start out in a more sustainable way? I mean, container gardens, yeah, but anything that you haven't heard of, that most people probably haven't heard of. Like, I know you referenced some books, or do you have any websites people can go to that you know of? Anything like that that might help them out? Or anybody they can contact if they want to start a petition, or just anything, you know, that on any level that might help just get your message out there as far as your preservation and...
I would say start small. The thing I wrote all over my walls everywhere is the word learn. I wrote it with marker all over my walls. Just learn. The one book I would say is really great is that John Seymour's Self-Sufficient Life and How to Live It. It's really awesome. I'll spit off a few names here of guys that do. They're my eco heroes, right? Alan Savory, Mark Shepard, Joel Salatin, Ron Finley, Will Allen, Paul Wheaton. These are all guys you can Google online and find really good stuff. Talk to farmers. Just learn. Youth in anything. Youth in knowledge is fresh and invigorating because, again, the polar opposite, my knowledge is my weakness. When I was new and I didn't know anything, it was my strength because I would try things that a 25-year veteran never would try. And he goes, wow, that was a good idea.
Right.
So
yeah,
learn.
We're open to learning. Learn. Right.
Compost everything. Nothing is garbage. Compost everything. I'm making, I don't know, quite a bit of compost, kitchen compost, and you know, I feed 5 or 6 chickens a year just on my kitchen scraps.
Wow.
You know, your lawn is valuable. It's fuel. Your trees, we raise bunnies on tree chop.
Wow.
You know, but there's no garbage.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah. Thank you, Tom. Will you come back?
I'd love to. God willing.
And can you just give us one more time where we can find you, your music?
Yes, ma'am. Powwow Media Group on YouTube. Pain of Wisdom in a World of Waste, one word, on Facebook. And painofwisdom.com. And that's that. You Google us. We're all, you know, people post stuff too. There's a bunch of other like stuff on YouTube that we have put. That's cool. There's a Froggy Days one, a really good show on Froggy Days on YouTube.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. This was great.
Thank you.
See you again. Yeah,
okay.
All right.
Thank you for allowing me on your show. Yeah.
Oh.
Hi, world. Thank you, world.
Thank you. All right, guys.
It looks like our 15-minute interview has turned into about an hour. Thank you so much, Tom, for joining us. And in case you just tuned in, this is our very special guest, Tom Dente, who's the frontman for a band called Pain of Wisdom in a World of Waste for Northeast Pennsylvania. Their message is sustainability, agriculture, and how we can change our future. Thank you so much, Tom, again for joining us. This has been awesome. We will have to have you back. Thank you, Terry, to my co-host, Terry, for doing all of this with me because I couldn't have done it without you. And we'll see you soon. We're on Whole World Radio.
Na malumapit ka sa pihing ng dahilan, ba't ka lumuluha? Ba't ka lumuluha? Tutulungan na kumaan, nandito lang ako. Ika'y pakikinggan, huwag ka nang lumuha. Huwag ka nang lumuha. Ako ang kaibigan mo, di mawawala sa piling mo. Tumaan man ang mga bagyo, andito lang ako para sa'yo. Ako ang kaibigan mo, di mawawala sa piling mo. Kahit na magkalayo tayo, andito lang ako para sa'yo. Kaibigan mo. Oh,
keep my